en podcast fra Podplay.
Ja, her det glatt.
Ja, det fin utsikt da, Erik.
Det det.
Blåser det alltid her? Altså,
Nei, ikke alltid, men når det først
har
tak, så kan det
blåse. Ja, nei, for det, altså, du har blåst som dette helt inn
I kom. Ja, det det. Ja, ja. Og den vinden den som gjør, den gjør jobben.
Den gjør jobben. Det en windchill på cirka minus 40 I dag, tror jeg.
Ja, deilig.
Så det sånn...
Veldig, veldig.
Det skikkelig båttemperatur. Og så glemte vi å si at det kølsvart ute fremdeles.
Ja, det jo helt bekmørkt. Det var derfor jeg sa det var fin utsikt, Erik. Ja. This device contains atoms. Ja, men det gjør jo alle devices.
Atomklokka fra NASA. Den første de bygde, som ikke var til dem selv.
Ja, kult. Ja, så tida blikket, klokka blikket mer nøyaktig enn dette.
Jeg får ikke mer Apollo I Norge enn det her.
Ja, skal sjekke det. 3,
2, 1. And lift off. 1, 2,
3, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, enter bed.
Okay, we checked all four systems, and there you go on modulation, all four, and keying with a go.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Du hører på din favorittpodcast. Jeg har jo lært meg til å bare si det, Erik, altså, for det, jeg såpass cocky.
Altså, hvis folk har holdt ut med oss I over 200 episoder, så må det jo være på et eller annet vis en slags favoritt.
Ja. Din favorittpodcast om ting som har med verdensrom å gjøre, det oss, det Romkapsel, og vi fremdeles på Ny Ålesund, eller fremdeles, vi igjen på Ny Ålesund. Her det veldig mørkt. Det midten av januar, det kaldt, det alle. Har du noen svarte prikker på fingrene eller på tærne, Erik?
Jeg har ikke det. Har kledd godt på meg, for jeg har jo da lest Prince Harrys selvbiografi Spare, hvor han forteller hva som skjedde da han gikk på ski og på innlandsisen på Grønland.
Ja.
Han, sammen med to kompiser, han forfrøs jo edlere deler I den grad at han måtte hastes tilbake til en dyr klinikk I Harley Street I London for å få fikset på ting.
Du vet,
han bruker mye tid på det. Det en svært interessant bok.
han kongelig I alle deler på han edlere.
Så du kan si at jeg har på meg mye undertøy, ja. Nils Johan, og det var kanskje mer informasjon enn lytterne trengte,
ja,
men
Jeg husker I forsvaret så holdt vi på med noe som het Texas Sibir hver kveld når vi kom inn I teltet. Det var da Texas var å ta vare på våpenet, og Sibir var at vi hadde sånn kameratsjekk på tærna.
Ja, ja,
ja. For min del så kan jeg bare si det at det gikk ikke så bra, så jeg kald på tærna absolutt hele tiden.
Ja.
Ja. Sånn, mer og deilig informasjon om oss der altså. Det tok noen år, men du blir stadig bedre og bedre kjent med oss. Nå skal vi slå over på engelsk, fordi denne episoden, som veldig mye av det som foregår her, det her jo engelsk.
Det et multinasjonalt forskermiljø, og det jo kjempefullt.
Og engelsk arbeidsspråket. Og det jo litt sånn, umiddelbart så kommer jeg til å tenke på Halvdan Sivertsen, jeg og sommerfugler I vinterland, altså, selv om det kanskje litt sånn off. Men
98% av lytterne våre vet ikke hva du refererer til.
Jo, da, fordi de har hørt coverversjonen som Vinny lagde på den der første runden av Hver gang vi gråtes.
Okay,
der var right. Men Susana Garcia Espada, welcome to Romkapsel.
Thank you very much. You could say
welcome to your office. This is because this is your world.
Yes, welcome you both to Ny Ålesund Geodetic Observatory.
Thank you.
We are very happy to have you here with us.
We are very happy and very cold to be here.
Yeah.
And we are also very respectful because you are the boss, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And you are okay. Just this is correct, I think. Station leader for Kartverkets Geodetic Observatory here at Ny Ålesund.
Yeah.
And would you like to have your old title back, base commander?
I think that station leader sounds already quite good.
But base commander.
I mean, hello.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Do you like station leader? Is that fine?
Yeah. I'm more like a. Team leader, I prefer work,
not, yeah,
team
not,
work and more like this oriented stuff.
not so bossy, but you are actually in charge of us here now. If we're eaten by a polar bear or slightly mauled by a polar bear, that's on you.
I hope that doesn't happen, but I have the responsibility for you and the Kartverket team permanent in Ny Ålesund. So I have to take care of you while you are here. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. But as you said, with your responsibilities, do you leave her permanently now?
We are five people who live permanently in Niolesum from Carberket, but we have a 75% contract, which means that we work for 3 months and then we have 1 month off every 3 months. So we keep traveling down to the mainland regularly. This is because it's kind of a healthy setup for us working here in Niolesund.
Because with the distance and the few people, I'm also guessing that from a work perspective, I mean, it's good for you to meet colleagues and perhaps family and perhaps see some sun now and then.
Yeah, it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
So Niolesund is a very small international community. It's a great place for work and life here. But of course, it's also a small bubble. And it's very good to keep contact with the real world in a way. Mm. So coming back to family, friends, to enjoy the sun is also very healthy for
and
for us.
Yeah, and that's why I have to ask, how did a Spanish lady end up in this dark, cold place?
Well, to make the long story short, I applied for a Carberket position already 10 years ago. I was living in Niolesund for 1 year. I have been working in geodetic observatories since more than 15 years now. And the job and the position here as operation engineer at the time was really calling me. So I really had to say yes when I got that opportunity. And after 6 years away, there was a new opportunity to come back to Niolesund. And I wanted to experience again the Arctic for longer time. And I have been here already for 4 years now.
Okay.
In my second contract with Carberket.
What does that do to someone that's grown up with the sun and the good temperature and the new here with darkness half the time and like now it's freezing?
Yeah, it's a very complete different environment. Not only the small community, but of course the Arctic. So far north is different experience for me. But like I like to say, is experience in which you learn every day and you never get tired of it. Oh. It's continually changing light and during the dark and
you're challenged,
midnight
right?
suns.
It's a challenging environment. I mean,
yeah.
It's sort of nature is in your face. You can't ignore it, right? Like you can in a big city down on the continent, but
exactly.
you can't do it here. You step outside and wham. That's my experience right now. It's just
and you adapt to it. And it's both life here and work here are challenging every day. So you never get bored of it. Mm. Or from my perspective, I have never get bored of it so far.
And you said you've been working in the geodetic the field for many, many years. What's your background?
Well, I'm telecommunication engineer in Spain University. And I was working in Jeves Observatory, which is 50 kilometers from Madrid. I was a civil worker there, working for the Spanish government. I came here for 1 year, 10 years ago. And afterwards, I have been working in the Azores Islands in Santa Maria Island. There is an observatory that both me and my colleague Ruben started from scratch and worked there for 5 years. So this is kind of my experience at work and background. Mm.
So, being a station leader, are you involved with the scientific observations here?
Yeah, so my role and our role here is to make sure that we provide and we observe with the best quality in the different techniques that we have in the observatory. And we, of course, get involved in the whole process because we get feedback from analysis and correlator, and we try to do our best to provide the best quality data. So we get feedback.
Yeah, and also getting it's pretty hands-on because there's not many people here, right? So I mean, everybody have to pitch in, right? And yeah.
Yeah, and also like Nielsen itself is a very special place to work because you learn not only from your field, but from all different people that come here as scientists to do research, Arctic research, continuously. So it's really a very fruitful environment. You learn a lot all the time.
So you talked about different kinds of measurements. What kind of we talked about VLBI, very long baseline interferometry. Are there any other kinds of measurements you do up here?
Yeah. So the Geodetic Fundamental Observatory in Nielsen is a place in which we collocate different techniques that are monitoring and continuously measurement how the Earth is moving in a space, so how the shape of the Earth is changing and how is it moving in a space. So we have four techniques that are continuously measuring. So it's a BLBI with the big radio telescopes for which we use the quasars, far distant sources in the universe.
That's so cool.
As a reference point to measure how the Earth is moving. Then we have GNSS, Global Navigation Satellite Systems, so it's fixed. GPS and Galileo antennas and receivers that are monitoring continuously. We have the gravimeters, which are measuring the gravity change.
We recently learned that the Earth is not round, that it wobbles, that the day is not really the length it is. And now you're saying that gravity varies?
Nothing is... everything is moving. So the Earth is a very complex system.
Yeah.
And everything is moving and changing all the time, even though we don't feel it or we don't notice. So our role, together with the whole international network of geodetic observatories around the Earth, is to measure this because there is no single country or institute that can do this alone. So we are an international network of observatories with all these different techniques, and we share all data together to be able to model how the Earth is and how is it moving, and to try to plan or to make a model that forecasts how is it going to move in the coming times.
Yeah. So basically, this is all dynamic, right?
Everything's
dynamic, and you said you're trying to model it to be able to predict some the Earth's behavior in the coming. Are you able to predict today, or how far ahead are you able to predict?
Well, yeah, there are some models, and maybe in the short term they can predict some Earth parameters. But it's still a long run until we can predict, for example, dynamics like earthquakes or volcanic eruptions.
Yeah, because
geodynamical, geophysical events more.
Yeah, because that's been like it always comes up when you have a big earthquake or something like that. Oh, how can we predict this? And we're nowhere near trying. Able to predict earthquakes.
Well, the scientific community is making a lot of efforts. So the idea with the observatories, fundamental observatories around the Earth, with up to state of art techniques, like for example, the brand new telescopes at Brandal are in a new standard in which the scientific community is aiming to estimate the position with an accuracy of millimeter, with millimeter accuracy. So this means that maybe in those measurements, we can find some patterns that can tell us more about forecast and prediction of earthquakes and volcanic eruptions.
I'm thinking this is also related to space, because when you said that gravity varies, I mean, it's gravity that keeps things in orbit around the Earth, and varying gravity obviously influences the movement of, for instance, spacecraft, satellites.
Of course, yeah.
And we are really dependent on precise location of spacecraft in the future. There's so much that's going to happen. For instance, in the coming lunar program, you are dependent, and we recently had a show about it, you are dependent on refueling in space. That requires a lot of dockings.
Yeah.
And that requires very precise location of the ship, the tanker ship, and also the fuel depository in space.
Mm.
So I'm just thinking that knowing these data has to be really important.
Well, it's not only important, but completely necessary. Yeah. So the contribution from a space geodesy is to create a international terrestrial reference frame, which provides accurate positions not only on Earth but also on the satellites that are orbiting, because these satellites or anything that is affected by gravity is changing the position all the time, also because of these gravity changes.
Oh, and that also,
which means that so to provide accuracy, they need to correct their theoretical orbits with the measurements that we provide in the international network.
And that's also with an exploding number of satellites, which we're seeing now with the mega constellations. I'm just thinking that this has to be really important in the future to avoid collisions, right? Because with all these satellites moving, you need to know all their orbits. I mean, Starlink alone are talking about 42,000 satellites in low Earth orbit, which is beyond... I mean, it's beyond belief even. But if they do it, they will have to track them. And every satellite is influenced by the Earth's gravity. Yep. So, yeah.
But the gravity, I still haven't left that.
Yeah, why does
it
vary?
The gravity varies. Why does it vary? What affects it? This is completely mind-boggling information to me.
Yeah. Well, gravity is... in a school we learn... that gravity constant, small g, that is 9.8 meters per square second.
Yeah.
Well, that's not true. The constant is not constant
you're
at
right.
all.
It's not a constant. It's a variable. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Which means that we have been. this constant depends on. Is different on every point on Earth, and it depends on the distance from the surface of the Earth till the center of the Earth. And it depends on all the materials that you can find in between the surface and the center of the Earth. So it's not the same gravity on the pole than on the equator, for example, because the distance to the center of the Earth is different. But also it depends on which materials you find. So it's not the same gravity during dry season than during wet season. If there is water underneath the Earth, or in the cavities underneath, or not. And it depends if there is oil or something, good materials that are interesting for society, gravity changes, and gravity is used in an indirect way to know what is under the surface of the Earth.
I'm also thinking that, for instance, if ice melts and is distributed in the ocean, then you have a lot of mass that is removed, for instance, from here, which could probably happen in the future. Then that will also affect gravity, right? Because it's so easy, so easy to forget. You always think that, gravity is something that planets have. No, everything with mass has gravity. So whenever, I mean, even we have gravity. Some of us have more gravity than others because it depends on mass. but everything has gravity. So, of course, when mass moves around
but how much does it vary? What's the biggest the extremes? Is it a lot?
It's 9.8 is still a valid number, right?
Yeah, of course. It's a very
decimals.
Good value for learning how gravity works in high school and even university level. But of course, if you want to launch a satellite, a rocket, or if you need to do accurate measurements, you need to take into account much more digits.
Yeah, and that's...
And how it changes.
Yeah, and that also is like a key word for this place. This is New Ålesund and the research and the measurements that you are doing here. We are talking digits.
Yes.
Yeah, we're not rounding stuff up or down.
No.
Yeah, we're not about? We're precise.
So here in Ny-Ålesund, we have two superconducting gravimeters, and they are up to measure 12 digits in this gravity.
Superconducting, okay. Now, so that means that you have something supercooled somewhere. You have something like...
Everything outside here is supercooled.
Yeah. No, but we're talking, this is really cold, I mean.
Yeah, so in the... There are two ways of measuring gravity. Yeah. One is absolute gravimeters, in which you just throw a small mass in a distance and you measure how long does it take for that mass to do this length. And then you can calculate the small g.
Yeah.
Or you can have relative gravimeters, which in which you have a suspended mass with some electromagnetic field, and the electromagnetic field changes because of the gravity changes, and you just measure these small changes in the position of the mass, and you can know how is the variation of gravity.
So you're saying that somewhere we're not really sure where, but is it close to here?
Yes.
The gravimeters?
Yes.
So can we? Is it possible to see them?
Yes, of course.
Oh, we have to see them.
Yeah. Well, the gravimeters are installed in separate buildings, so they are. We don't interfere as much, or we try to interfere the less possible, because they are so sensitive that just while we walk on the street, will affect the measurements of the gravimeters.
So you have to look at them through binoculars.
And also, if you have sort of two largest masses close to the gravimeter, suddenly...
Oh my God, they just pop out.
Something just went off the scales.
You don't have to worry, because the kind of pattern that you introduce in the data is not gravity... it's not the gravity or earthquakes, because these gravimeters are so sensitive that they belong to the international network around the world. And when there is an earthquake on the other side of the world, for example, in Japan, there is energy that is released on the surface of the Earth and also inside the Earth. And all this energy gets also up here to the gravimeters. And we are able to measure those change, those patterns. And if you have... You make triangulation between three gravimeters, you can actually find the epicenter of the earthquake, knowing the position where it happened and the magnitude of the earthquake.
So you even deliver, so you deliver data points for seismologists as well?
Yeah.
So basically it's also a seismometer.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So these gravimeters are so sensitive that they can be used as a seismograph.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're just measuring everything here.
Everything that moves.
Everything that moves.
And change.
But you said superconducting, so that means that you have chilled. Is this the electromagnet that is chilled to?
Well, so there is a rare material.
Rare earth material, something.
Yeah. I don't remember the name now. Sorry, but this is levitating. And of course, is superconducting because we have to cool down to cryogenic temperature. So the gravimeter itself has a complex system with helium, in which there is a cold head and there is
liquid helium is cooled. Yeah, I mean, every sense of the word. Yeah. It's a cool liquid as well, an interesting liquid. So you literally have tanks of liquid helium.
Yeah, well, we use it as gas. But the concept is the same. So we just extract the heat from inside the gravimeter and with the helium gas in a closed circuit.
1202.
But you also talked about, you said you had various satellite methods, right? So you have do you use some kind of GPS here also?
Yeah. So GPS is the American constellation. Mm-hmm. Galileo is the European constellation. We have GLONASS, for example, the Russian constellation. Mm. Beidou, the Chinese constellation. And all of these systems in geodesy, they are called global navigation satellite systems. So it's the kind of same technique, but of course different owners, let's say. And we have here permanent antennas, which are connecting to all these different manufacturer satellites, and we are using them to estimate with a centimeter accuracy the position of those antennas. So it's like in the GPS that we have in our phone, it's just connected to GPS satellites. There are new phones now that can connect also to Galileo satellites, for example. And of course, they provide an accuracy of a few dozens of meters. But with the antennas that we have here that are specifically to be permanent monitoring, we can go down to centimeter accuracy.
Okay, so your antennas here and the data flow that you are receiving from these positioning satellites here, they are used to feed the systems that are used by various...
Yeah, this data, all this data is delivered as position, a time series of positions for all of these instruments. And they are input for the product that we provide, that is actually the International Terrestrial Reference Frame. So this reference frame is measuring where the center of the Earth is and how is it moving. And all these positions that are measured with a lot of accuracy, where they are and how they are moving. So at the end, it's like having a 3D grid in which you see how the Earth is changing with respect, I mean, the center of the Earth.
The center of the, yeah.
But with respect, we tie them to the celestial reference frame, which are those quasars that we are using as fixed points. Oh. Because the GNSS, Global Navigation Satellite System, all these satellites are not fixed points. They are changing with the Earth system. So we cannot use them as fix, you know, there is no technique that is perfect in this world.
That's really interesting because, as I said, everything is moving, and then you need a sort of fixed point. And in the old days, they used to say fixed. They actually called them fixed stars. The stars were sort of seen as fixed. I mean, you had the daily rotation, but essentially they were fixed. And then they discovered that no, stars have a lot of proper motion.
Yeah, of course.
And close stars have, I guess, far too much proper motion for you to use them as a reference point. But then you just travel back in time and you find something that is so far away and is so old that it doesn't move a lot. So that's really interesting.
I just realized, so this is why the quasars that are that far away, both in distance and time, are used as the fixed points.
Yeah.
That's why you're not using it. It would be more practical to use something closer,
think. In one sense, yeah, right, because, I mean, a star is a point source, and stars are well-known and well-documented. On the other hand, they do actually move with respect to each other. Mm. And the movement is quite noticeable with for astronomers. So
everything in the universe is also moving all
everything
the time.
Is moving,
even
yeah.
Those quasars. But they are so far, far away that as seen from the Earth with the current state of art, the technique state of art, we see them as fixed points. And we have a catalog of quasars in which astronomers that work on astrometry are monitoring continuously also how these quasars are evolving. And once they are moving something, or they are moving, or they are having some source structure, they are out of the catalog and they are not good enough for geodesy purposes.
Wow, because I think you had some assignment. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I realized what we just thought of, didn't we? We thought about James Webb, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. Because we one of our regular guests works on Webb. He was one of the principal investigators on the early Webb images. And he's a cosmologist and he looks very, 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 very far back in time. But I actually also just thought before you said it, I thought, oh, wait a second. That means that even quasars might move. I haven't even thought of that before. And of course, if you require higher accuracy and the quasar observations get better, you might end up saying, where do you go then? I mean, is there something even... Because you're already sort of with the oldest quasars, you're already at sort of close to the dark times, right? So where we can't see anything. Wow.
There is a very deep collaboration between astronomy and geodesy.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we are doing space geodesy and BLBI, but we are also, in a way, astronomers because we are using these sources and we collaborate closely with astronomers. We need to make sure that the fixed point is as fixed or as fixed as we believe it is. Mm. Otherwise, it will introduce an error in our estimations and accuracy. Everything is introduces errors, even the atmosphere, you know, and water vapor in the atmosphere. But we have to try to model the best.
And you already mentioned it in that the you said the astrometry, which is how you measure positions in the universe, which is a very, very important part of astronomy. But it's, again, a bit like geodesy. It's sort of seen as unsexy. Okay, it's sort of nitty-gritty, lots of math. It's extremely important, but not in a sort of in-your-face obvious way. But nothing would work. Nothing in astronomy would work unless you had good measurements of position, right? Mm. So it's a sort of a parallel situation.
But talking about Susanna, what do you
say? I was about to say that actually the quasars that we use in geodesy, I usually say that are boring sources for astronomers because you know they want
something to happen.
they are just fixed points and they are look like a point in fixed in the universe and it's like boring for
you like them when
you can nothing. You can have them you can have them.
But what I was thinking since we were talking about introducing errors and all over the place we see cell phones turn off Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, everything because they disrupt our listening, our measurements from these quasars. What about other disruptions in this listening, in this, your observations? What about satellites beaming down information and talking to each other? They must also disrupt the observation.
Yeah, so in BLBI, we are observing these quasars that are so far, far away. They travel in the vacuum universe, thousands of years, and arrive to the Earth, to the ionosphere first. And we have a high content of electrons in the ionosphere, and those electrons affect the signal in a way that is not good for us. So we model the ionosphere first, then we get to the troposphere in which we have a variable water vapor clouds that are changing all the times. And those clouds and water vapor also affect the signal path of the electromagnetic field that comes from quasars, which means that we get not a direct straight ray from the quasar, but we get a bit of reflections and refraction in the atmosphere and will make look like an extra error in our measurements that we need to correct. So we have to model ionosphere, the troposphere, we have continuous measurements of temperature, humidity, and try to at different elevations in the atmosphere correct for those water vapor content, so we can,
But so you don't have yet any disruption from satellite signals?
Well, and this is happening because we are observing in a bandwidth from 2 gigahertz up to 32 gigahertz. Everything that is, because we are observing quasars that are very faint sources, very weak. Everything that is human-made and is in that frequency that we are observing is much more powerful than the signal that we are observing.
Yeah.
So what happens, for example, with satellites that are like a Starlink constellation and so, is that they are using some frequency in the S-band, so 2 gigahertz something, and it's the same frequency that we are observing. So we see a saturated signal level when we are close to those satellites.
Okay, yeah.
So what the international community is doing now is just knowing where the satellites are passing by, we go and observe opposite direction in the sky to quasars that are very far away from those satellites that are using the same frequency as we want to hear. So we are kind of listening to a small whisper from quasars, and suddenly these satellites that are passing by just in front or between us, our antenna and the quasar, are having very loud music.
Shouting, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a sort of, and this is, at least according to, when you talk to people who are in the space business, they will always say that this is just the start. Mega constellations are the future. So Starlink has just been started. And it was fairly recently, a couple of years ago, where Elon Musk used to say that, no, they were not going to do high latitudes because there were so few people up here. Now they're all in on high latitudes. So, usually they were originally supposed to stay below 60 degrees north and south. But now they're up here and you're seeing ever more. And Amazon is planning to launch their Kuiper network, and China is talking about their own sort of Starlink clone. I mean, this has to get worse and worse for every year.
This is going to be a big challenge for astronomy, radio astronomy, and for space geodesy. It's already, and it's in the coming years, is going to be a bigger challenge. Is, as I said before, no single country can do this alone. So even if Ny'ulesund, that is so far north, were not affected, which will be, but if we were kind of, you know, outside, we can. It doesn't mean anything because the whole rest of observatories are distributed all around the globe. And if they are blind or, you know, they cannot listen to quasars, it doesn't help because,
You're dependent on, everyone is dependent on everyone else.
Yeah, the quality of our measurements is also depending on the quality of every other observatory quality.
But here's the irony or paradox, if you will. I mean, these satellite services depend on what you deliver. So they're dependent. So they're sort of sawing off the branch they're sitting on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a thought just occurred to me. Could you... and since this has to do with positioning and fixed points, but still, could you kind of substitute the telescope that I'm looking at right now on the monitor? Could it be substituted with a telescope, a satellite in space, above? The
far side of the moon, I was thinking, but then I was thinking, but then you would be making measurements on the moon, right?
Well, there have been already some projects in which there was a PLBI dish in satellites. You still need to correct that position of the satellite.
So yeah, you have to measure the satellite again.
Yeah.
Enter the laser from NASA, right? Or
the laser measurements.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's also
The fourth technique that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah.
Oh, we have to talk about that because it's lasers. It's space lasers. Hello.
And from just to say, from my the stairs to the room that I the building we're staying in, yesterday evening, I saw there is this German institute here.
Yeah. German French ABPEF Institute.
They have a laser and. There's this dome on top of the building next to the building we're staying in. Did you not see that?
I didn't.
There's a dome and then there's a laser there. Yeah. That wasn't used last night, as I could see, but there was a window in the roof that I saw. And there was like this green flashing lights coming from inside. I was wondering, what are they doing there, making a Frankenstein, or what's going on with the flashing lights inside the building? So there are strange things going on here.
Yeah, in ABPEF, they have this laser that is in the vertical direction. And they, with the laser, they are able to study the composition of the atmosphere. So they get reflections from different molecules, and they are able to know how many of them are so they are used basically for knowing of the atmosphere and weather models.
Mm, okay.
But the other thing we're talking about was when you use it to
communicate with satellites?
Yeah, but our laser is a bit different.
Yeah, how does that work?
We will have, it's an ongoing project, so it will be installed during this year and operational hopefully in 25. It's a project together with NASA. And the idea of this SLR, satellite laser ranging, is that you have the beam of the laser all the way from here to the satellite and back, and you are able to measure the distance to the satellite. So you are able to actually calculate the orbit of the satellite when it goes over your point of view, but not only us, in the international network. So you are able to correct the orbit and to measure the orbit, the real orbit of the satellites at any time.
And this is, again, important for positioning. And
yes.
Okay. So, yeah, and then what you will do with this satellite when it, as we know, everything with NASA, it takes time and it's always delayed. It was supposed to be here 2 years ago, and it's delayed, and they're working, getting it done. And when it's put in place and operational, will it track? Like a satellite, for as long as you can see it.
We will do campaigns. And of course, one of the tricky things with this laser is that you have an estimate position for the satellite, but it can be a bit different. It's like you have to point with this very small beam into a laser that is thousands of kilometers from Earth, which means that, just to aim is a tricky.
Yeah.
And also, what kind of laser is it? Is it a visible laser or infrared? Or
it's a visible laser.
So then it's also affected by the atmosphere, right?
Yes.
So for instance, when it's cloudy, I mean, you basically can't get through.
Yeah, we cannot.
So everything you said about VLBI and radio affected by the atmosphere also goes for lasers, right?
Yeah, but with the VLBI and the radio frequencies we observe, we can observe in any kind of weather. Yeah. So it's, it doesn't matter if it's cloudy or, well, of course, the measurements, the error will be bigger, but we can still correct and see through the clouds. But with the laser, we need a clear sky. Mm-hmm. And also because of safety, because it could be some reflections and this laser is dangerous for the eyes. So we also have a lot of security protocols around it. There cannot be planes in the
sky. That's interesting. Is there a no-fly zone over this area?
Well, yeah. As for the, do you think your radio? Because planes have radio.
Yeah, I'm thinking everything. Lasers and
And you're actually allowed to use Bluetooth on the plane.
We came with by plane.
But
yesterday
there's one plane that's allowed.
Yeah. So is when there is a plane and the tower in Longyearbyen Airport has control over it. There is information here, and they even have an emergency pass button in Longyearbyen Airport that can stop the laser here. So NASA works a lot on this.
So that's cool. They actually have sort of a red button that say, stop the laser.
Yeah.
Somebody in Longyearbyen
safety
has a
first.
they have a really cool job.
Yeah.
I'm the person who controls the space laser with a big red button.
I'm the laser commander.
So of course you have the planes coming from Longyearbyen, but you also have planes that cross over the North Pole. Mm. So if you go into Flight Radar, the app, you will see planes, not many, but there are planes passing overhead. Will they affect your observations anyway?
Yeah. So when there is any kind of plane, we will need to stop the observations for that period.
Yeah, for the laser, but does it affect the VLBI?
No,
because with the VLBI we are not transmitting anything. We are just listening with the. So the parabola of the radio telescope is just collecting all the energy from the quasars and everything else that is passing by. So of course, if there is a satellite, a plane, and it's transmitting in the same frequency, we will also get that as quasar information, which is not true, so we will get like a saturated signal in the.
So then you have system. to know that there's a satellite passing, and then you have to kind of filter that out of your data.
Yeah, so there will be a safety system that is monitoring continuously all the traffic, air traffic.
Okay.
And in case there is any plane coming into the security area, everything will be turned off.
Okay. Yeah. But with the VLBI, what exactly is the data that you are receiving?
That's, yeah, you want to know it all?
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, we don't have anything else to do. So.
Yeah, we're stuck here. So. Yeah. Tell.
So very long baseline interferometry means that one single antenna observing together is kind of useless. We need at least two. And the baseline or distance between the antennas is...
Yeah.
It's okay?
Yeah.
It's the emergency phone from Lombard.
Can you answer?
Emergency phone.
Or do you want me to answer? 1 second. I just want to...
Hello?
It's emergency. Ah. Is there a polar bear?
Emergency phone from Lombard.
Okay, det høres kanskje ikke ut som en, noe sånn totalt verdensødeleggende.
Nei, det... Det var ingen atomer som var... Eller noe... Noen Higgs-bosoner som var ute av containment.
So Axel is stuck in Randall because the battery of the car died and he cannot come back.
Ja, det var nå var det base commanderen som station chief som
Du klarer ikke å styre det der.
Nei, jeg liker base commander, det kult.
You're the base commander. Just to him you're the base commander, no matter what you call yourself.
Som måtte ut på et lite oppdrag, så da...
Det var redningsoppdrag, var det ikke det?
Litt redningsoppdrag. Ikke så kult som det høres ut som. Det var en bil som var tom for batteri.
Her oppe, så kan det bety at du blir en snack for et stor predator.
Alle små ting blir store her. Men vi kommer tilbake etterpå, da på en litt annen lokasjon, men vi kommer tilbake med... Vi fortsetter på denne... Hva faktisk dataene som kommer ned fra denne VLBI-observasjonen? Det får du høre plutselig.
1202.
Okay, so after the base commander has dealt with the emergency phone call, which wasn't that emergency at all, but it could have been. Someone was trapped with a car that couldn't drive, and you will freeze to death at some point.
Actually, something. I mean, that's something which... and isn't it correct that most of the doors here are open, so if you are in emergency, you can actually... seek shelter, or how was that?
In town, all buildings have the main door open. Yeah. All cars have also are open. So in case there is a polar bear or passing by, you can just find shelter.
I like that, in case there's a polar bear. How often is there a polar bear?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, in summertime, it's quite regular, like from June... Till late August, we have seen an increased number of polar bear passing by or around in the fjord. Of course, we are living in their kingdom, so we are, you know, visitors. In winter time, it's not so often, but it's not that. Is that we don't see them, but I'm pretty sure that around.
That's the thing. It's dark and they're white against the white background. I'm thinking they might be the out
famous
there.
Famous last words, we don't see them.
But how do you make... can they just walk into the city or is anyone keeping watch? Or is?
Well, in town, as there is always somewhere to shelter, it's okay to walk. Yeah. And but once you go out from town, you need to carry a flare gun and a rifle with you for polar bear protection. And Kings Bay, they have 24 hours watchman, a person that is all the time on watch. Mm. So if you spot a polar bear or if anyone is in trouble, we have safety procedures to call directly the watchman and we get support from them.
Okay.
It's sort of a scientific research establishment, unlike most others.
Yeah.
The polar bear watchman. Yeah.
Of course, someone has to do that job as well. And with the magic of editing, we will now have a small tour of the place that we are in right now. So, da kan vi hoppe over til norsk, for Leif Morten tar oss med på en liten runde inn i teleskopene her. och så ska vi snacka mer med Susanna efter det för då ska jag få svar på frågor jag stilte för telefonen ringte. Så magi, trylltryll och fiffig redigering och sån är det.
Nu är vi I gangen ingången på Brandal observatoriet.
Så här är alltså nu står vi på något så vi nog mitt ja vi står rätt ja sån om nästan mitt mellan VLBI teleskopen.
Ja.
Ja. Ja. Åh, de fingrar som går med fingrarna dina, Erik.
Ja, det går bättre nu, men ja. det är häftigt.
Ja. Ja.
Det är verkligen sekunder alltså. Du bara tar fram kamera och så måste du ta av handskarna och puff.
Ja. Så är fingrarna nästan svarta på tuppen.
Ja.
Ja. Deilig.
Nu är vi inne I nordantennen. Detta är då den som är installerat med en Vegos mottagare, den nya sista typen för VLBI-målinger. Själva metalldelen uppe på betongen väger 85 ton. Som du då svajar runt på. Och I azimut så kan gå med upp till 12 grader I sekunden och elevation 6 grader I sekunden. Och så inne I här så har vi något som heter en invar wire. En invar wire, den är väldigt stabil med temperaturförändringar och en av våra största fiender det är temperaturförändringar. Så den hänger den wiren från centret I antennen på I azimut och ner här. Och vi ser att foten går upp och ner så kan vi måla höjdskillnaden. Du ser vi har lite sån märker I golvet här för att sätta ner tripoden. Du ser där har vi en sån bolt och du har såna flera bolter runt omkring för att checka upp med local tie för att se att detta fundamentet verkligen står I ro. Vi må veta att antennen står absolut I ro.
Ja.
Så här är det.
Men jag alltså bara varför är det viktigt?
Jo, när du ska bestämma en position så är det väldigt viktigt att utstyret du målar med inte beveger sig.
Ja. Men vad är det som gör att det kan bli bevegelse?
Temperaturvariationer?
Ja, I grunden?
Nej, I rummet här.
Oh, ja.
Fordi du har jo først og fremst variasjonen gjennom årstidene. Og om sommeren så vil det være varmere, da utvider metallet seg, og da blir det forskjell I høyde. Sånn som den gamle antenna, når at vi gjorde målinger der, så fikk vi forespørsel fra den som analyserte dataene. Hvorfor tilter den antenna alltid litt grann I motsatt retning av sola? Så når du har sola gående rundt deg hele tiden, så varmer du opp på ene siden, så blir den utvider seg, og så bikker antenna. Og da måtte vi sette opp en vegg med trevirke som satte skygge på stålet, sånn at antenna ikke bikket ham og sola skjent på ham.
Men hvor mye bevegelse det vi snakker om her?
Det snakk om bare små millimeter, tiendels millimeter. Men når du skal ha Vegos, sitt krav en millimeters nøyaktighet, men maks drift på 0,1 millimeter per år. Da kan vi bare lokke igjen her.
Ja.
Hvis han vil være nede. Da har vi bak her. Så har vi... det to runder her, selvfølgelig.
Det blir kaldt.
Ja, her blir det veldig...
Nå er vi ute nå. Ja. Ei.
Utlampa virker ikke
her. Neida.
Men her har vi vinsj. Eller kran,
ja.
Og så tar vi vekk disse to her, og så løfter vi mottageren inn og ut.
Mottageren?
Ja, og så skinnegang inn I antenna der.
Åja. Ja. Og nå den der kanariefuglen her, det den kompressoren eller stempelet som vi snakket om her.
Ja, og den sånn fin.
Ja.
Har det vært noen lyder, da vet du at det nå det dritt I systemet.
Ja, du vet at nå høres det bra ut, du vet at det fungerer.
Ja. Og da ser du, her to motorer og girkasser, samme på andre siden.
Ja, så det fordi det
elevasjon.
Elevasjons, ja.
Og så har du de fire som står nede I gulvet,
ja,
det azimut som rundt.
Ja. Kult. Ja,
der kan vi vel bare tusle ned igjen.
Ja, skal vi se.
Ja, bare sånn sokker. Ja.
Fiffig redigering ferdig. Vi tilbake da på altså I bygningen som huser VLBI-teleskopene. Der vi, altså, se bort ifra den fiffige redigeringen, så var vi der for noen minutter siden.
Det så fint det med fiffig redigering. Jeg tenker på sånn gammel NRK, altså, de beste bildene får du på radio, pleier NRK å si. Vi litt der nå, vi ikke det?
Jo, jo. Men vi åpne og ærlige om metoden.
Det helt sant. Det ikke noe juks i vår...
Det masse juks, men vi sier når vi gjør det. Sånn det. Back to the question that I was asking before the phone rang, base commander. The data that you are receiving, the actual data you're receiving from the telescopes that we're sitting next to right now, what is that?
To make the long story short, we are receiving the electromagnetic energy traveling all the way from the quasars to the telescopes. The distance is so far, far away that we see this energy as a flat wavefront. And as I said before, you need two or more telescopes working as interferometer to have results. And what we do is this flat wavefront is traveling all the way through the vacuum in the universe, arriving to the Earth. And because of the geometry of the Earth, this flat wavefront will arrive first to the antenna, for example, in Nyålesund, and slightly later to a second antenna, for example, in Germany. What we do in BLBI, geodetic BLBI, is to measure the extra time delay of the arrival signal, of the wavefront arrival signal, with what telescope with respect the other. We are talking about picoseconds delay of the arrival.
Picoseconds,
which is 10 to the power of minus 12. Something really, really, really
A thousandth of a billion. Yeah, I think that's it.
Again with all the decimals, yeah?
Yeah, again with all the decimals. There's very, very small numbers in this place. Yeah.
So if you make a line between a German telescope and Nyålesund telescope, you will have, with the wavefront arriving, you will have a rectangular triangle, and using basic trigonometry, you can calculate or you can convert this extra time delay into a distance, and then you can calculate the distance or baseline in between the telescope. If you keep doing this experiment day after day, you will be able to monitor how the two telescopes are moving with respect to the other. And this is a good example on how we measure plate tectonics movement, because telescopes are placed in different plate tectonics around the Earth. So what we do after observing for 24 hours one quasar dancing together with other telescopes around the Earth, we deliver the data to the correlator. That is the place where everyone delivers the data through the internet or through or sending in like in the former times hard disk by snail post services to the correlator, and the correlator puts together and compare every pair of signals in between every pair of telescopes in the network to be able to determine this extra time delay between them. Mm. So at the end, what we get is a 3D network or how every pair of antennas is moving with respect every other.
So what's the accuracy with these two antennas? What's sort of the movement you can detect?
We are down to millimeter accuracy, and with the new system that we have now at Brandall, so it's the new standard in the BLBI that is called BIGOS.
BIGOS, yes, we already,
You heard about this word already, so it's BLBI Geodetic Observing System standard at state of art. We are aiming to have millimeter accuracy also in the vertical component, which is the component that is more difficult to estimate. So at the end, it's in statistics, and the noise, because it's noise, white noise that we collect from the quasars is useless unless you compare it with another antenna data. And then when you match the signals, you find the maximum correlation. You see where signal in Nyålesund is matching the signal in German telescope Betzel, for example. And then you can find this extra time delay. And by doing a lot of observation, you have mathematics, a normal equation system in which you can estimate the position of the telescopes that are involved in the network.
So does that mean that when doing an observation, you have to do that simultaneously as the one, like, for instance, in Germany, you have to, you can't, you have to do it at the same time.
Because you need to have the same wavefront, right?
Yes.
So there is
an international BLBI service that coordinates all this work. So the international BLBI service coordinator prepares a schedule for the year and schedule 24-hour sessions in which different antennas are involved depending on what parameters they want to estimate more optimal. And then usually we observe in Nielsen from 2 days up to 5 days per week at the current moment, 24 hours. I forgot what I was going to say, sorry.
Just a simple question. You talk about wavefronts. Is that, could you compare that when you see a wave in the ocean coming into the shore, right?
Yeah.
So the front of the wave hitting towards the shore, it's a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, a good example is when you throw a stone in the lake and you see all these circles around. If you are kind of in the infinity distance to that stone in the lake, you won't see like a circle. You will see...
It will be flat.
Yeah, like a flat flat wavefront. That's what we call a flat
wavefront. So sort of like a flat wave.
But what are you... is it like a noise or what is it?
It's electromagnetic energy. Yeah. So at the end it's like... a wave of energy traveling in space is so weak that we say it's noise because it's very, very weak, very, very small. Anything that is human-made is much more powerful than that. A light, a ball, a small candle light is stronger than, thousands of times stronger than this.
I think one of the interesting things here is that I mean, astronomers would use the data in a completely different way, right? Yeah. So you're taking the same data that an astronomer would receive, but you're using it in a different way, and you're calculating it in a bit different way to do something completely other than astronomy, which I think is really cool. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, well, this technology is based on astronomy technique.
Yeah, interferometry, it's an old technique here, so
But it's the other way around. Like, astronomers assume that the position of the telescope is fixed and that they have the control over everything that is on Earth, and they just model what is outside there. But for geodesists, what we do is that we assume that everything that is out there is just a fixed point that we know very well and is fixed, and we estimate everything that is just on Earth. So it's course, like a different perspective of the same thing, but it's the same.
But of course, you know that it isn't fixed, so...
Yeah.
And what we have learned is that nothing is fixed.
Nothing is fixed.
That you thought
we have... Our worldview has been destroyed. You talked about the correlator, which first sounds like something from a dystopian young adult novel. But what is... Is it a place? Is it a piece of software? A group of people? What's the correlator? And that's the place where all the data is gathered, right?
Yeah.
So that's also where... Much of the heavy lifting is done, where you sort of,
A correlator is a supercomputer. Nowadays, is a supercomputer with lots of capacity for storing all data. In 24 hours, with the new Bigos antennas at the Brandal Geodetic Observatory, we store up to 80 terabytes of data in 24 hours.
But is it even? I know there's fiber here. Is it broad enough to sort of? Could you transmit all that data raw?
Well, the reason why there is fiber optic in Nielsen actually is because of the BLBI antennas. It's because of the need to transfer almost real time after we finish the observation. So we observe, and just after observing, we send the data because it takes time. Sometimes, depending of course on the bandwidth, you can spend few days to transfer 24 hours observations, so that's important.
So that's why YouTube is better here than in my home in Oslo.
and then you will realize when YouTube is lagging, there is observation data being transferred and taking up all the bandwidth. Yeah.
One last question from me is: we talked about this is very useful data. So the various so the various, I mean, companies or nation states who do operate these, for instance, GPS network, GLONASS, the Chinese Baidu, how can they access this data? How do they sort of get hold of it? Is it, I mean, it's prepared, so it's in form of, it's in a sort of standard format, and it's, are the files they can access and read?
Well, geodesy and space geodesy products is based on the best effort or contribution from the international community, mm-hmm. and all the products that are done are free to use, and they are available for everyone or everything that needs them.
I'm guessing it's not in a very big Excel file, right?
Well, it's called probably Synex file, and it's just a bunch of numbers one after the other. When you can find corrections or positions for fixed points, geodetic fixed points around the Earth.
Points that are, as far as we know, fixed.
Nothing is fixed. Never forget that nothing is fixed. That's not correct.
Fixed right now, but in a few moments.
Monitor.
Yeah, as far as we know, they are, but maybe not. But to the best of our knowledge, at this time, they are. Okay, Susanna, thank you very much. This has been very, very interesting. My head is boiling and it's aching, and I have understood about 50%, 40. I won't brag about what you said, but it's very interesting to know. And
This is mind-blowing, because if you think that we are observing noise from a source that is thousands of years, light years ago, and we are estimating millimeter positions by using that, and if you think now, the data that we are collecting now is from probably a quasar that is not there anymore, mm-hmm. but we don't know yet because it's so far away that who knows, you know?
Some of these are so far away that not only are they probably burned out long ago, but they may have burned out before our sun was born. So it's
stop
so
talking,
it's so ancient.
Stop
now he's really boiling.
my head is done. Okay.
Skal vi runde litt?
Ja, kan vi være så snille gjøre
det?
Lande litt. Jeg trenger tid til å prosessere dette og gå ut.
Lande litt sånn mindre sånn bumpy enn Dornjern I går.
Stirre på månen, et eller annet sånt.
Ja, men månen oppe her, det
Ja,
lydelig.
Det var veldig vakkert I stad. Det var det. Det var så lyst vi fikk
det. I de 10 sekunder vi orket å være ute og se på.
Men nei, altså, dette jo et eventyr, det jo kjempegøy her. Ja. Og så håper jeg, kjære ørevenn, at vi klarer å formidle det på en måte som gjør at, at it makes sense, og at du får et inntrykk av hvordan det her. For det jo, det som du sa I sted, dette det nærmeste vi kommer en Mars-base, altså.
Ja, dette kommer dere til å høre en del. Dere kommer til å bli lei av å høre akkurat det.
Ja, jeg tror det. Ut I kulla, se om vi finner noen isbjørn. Neida. Vi på de vante stedene, Facebook etter hvert, når vi kommer tilbake til internett, Instagram, der det, romkapsel.no. Takk for at dere holder ut, ta en parasett, og så høres vi om en uke.
Du har hørt en podcast fra Podplay. En enklere måte å høre podcast på. Last ned appen Podplay, eller se podplay.no.